All right, gang, it is time for Puck Off. And Fraser Smith here, Beverly Hills in Sierra Madre, Joe Bartnick in Hollywood, Andy Beccaro, our producer Emma is back. Guys, it's time for Puck Off.
Hey, Fraser, what's going on?
It's all good, buddy. How are you?
You know, we stole one on the island, a miracle, then big Sunday, and then last night, you know, pretty much a bummer against the Capitals. Connor Sherry, it's getting shot by your own BB gun, Fraser.
I knew you weren't going to be happy with that.
I mean,
I knew you would not be happy. He got two on you there.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, what are you going to do?
The worst is it was from his spot. It was from the spot he scored in overtime to beat the Sharks. And what was that, game two, to go up 2-0? It was the same spot in the same building. Had to see him score there. That hurt.
It's the only place he can score from. I mean, it's like his mark. Just put a square there. But a lot of stuff going on. Just so much talk about. I'm going to get into Jágr's 49th birthday. I'm going to get into Detroit. I'm going to get into Buffalo. I need a new coach. I'm going to get into Team USA. I'm going to get into the Flower. I want to get into the debacle in Arizona. But we have a very, very special guest, the czar at Pro Hockey News. The great Lou Lofredo is with us. And I thought it was interesting because of COVID, kind of just maybe now taking it a little bit back, but really the NHL got hit by it. I wondered what the rest of the world was doing and how the leagues were surviving. And no one knows more about hockey outside of the U.S. in the U.S. than Lou. So, Lou, welcome.
All right, Lou.
Thank you. Thank you, one and all. Don't forget to tip your waitresses. I'll be here all week.
Looking good on Zoom, Lou.
It's a bald head underneath there, and Emma would have to do some work to cut the shine down. So anyway, thanks for having me.
No,
it's our pleasure, Lou.
Yeah, it's been too long. We saw what's happening with the NHL, how it's dealing with it. And we know the AHL is starting up. I guess the next comparable league would be the KHL. How have they combated it, or have they just ignored it and let people drop in the streets, or did they get cancellations? Or what did the KHL do, Lou, with this whole thing?
Yeah, the KHL is going forward, or has been going forward. They have limited capacity, limited attendance in the arenas, but they are at least continuing with their season. European leagues have basically done the same thing, limited seating, but they are continuing with some of the Euro divisions. You know, the one that's taken it really hard is the Elite Ice Hockey League out of the UK. They, along with the National Ice Hockey League and the Scottish Hockey League, have all really just taken it hard. They have canceled their seasons up and down the line. The UK government COVID relief funds have not reached into the sport, into hockey. It's certainly reached into the upper tiers of football, if you will, but hockey has taken it really in the breezers, if you will. Look at the NHL. I gave them nothing but kudos for how they handled the play-in tournament as well as the playoffs and the Stanley Cup final last season. You know, those bubbles, keeping it tight, keeping control over the protocols, obviously worked out just perfectly. This season, what are we up to? 17% of the games have been postponed, I think. And at some point, and I think I would throw this back to you guys, what do you we had this discussion on our own podcast last week. At what's the tipping point for being completely unable to carry forward on the scheduled postponed games.
Well, that's kind of my reason to bring on. I don't know what the tipping point is, and that's what I was wondering, if someone in, you know, New Zealand or Australia or Asia or Russia, anywhere, hit the tipping point, and if anyone was using the win percentage mode or the, well, we're going to play less games, or we ended the season here, here's who's in, or like, does the KHL have a new taxi squad system, or are they just letting people show up from the, oh, you have a stick, come on in, we went down a defenseman, you know?
Well, you know what? I don't know if this is the worst so far, but the Flyers are really up against it for their game tomorrow against the Rangers.
Oh, too bad.
Well, yeah, I know you wouldn't care about that, but they're going to actually start four players who've never played in the NHL.
They'll beat the Rangers.
Probably.
That's a diehard Ranger fan talking.
Maybe the way it's going so far this year, yeah. But they actually have to start a bunch of guys from their taxi squad, right, and also some guys who've just played in the AHL. So I don't know if that's the most so far, but they really got hit.
Well, Pierre LeBrun has not been subtle in saying to all fans of the NHL, basically all he's tweeted all year is pay attention to points percentage. Make sure you're looking at your team's points percentage, where you are in the standings or what's going on. How many points are you getting out of any given points that are allotted? That's what's important, because I do think there's going to come a time where some of these games aren't going to get rescheduled. And I think that's going to be a sticky thing, because it's just going to be impossible. I don't see how they can do it. I mean, Dallas and Pittsburgh, if they have any more cancellations, I mean, they're going to have to play every day in March. They're going to play a doubleheader. Like, I don't know how they're going to get it done. So points percentage, I think, might be seeding the playoffs this year.
So, Joe, back to your original question, and it follows on with what that discussion is. The other leagues have either shut down completely overseas, or you've got the KHL that it's just pushing forward. It's rare that you see a game, you know, have any kind of cancellation. So they may just be bringing guys up with a stick and, you know, dropping them on the ice. Listen, I'm referred to as Mr. Sunshine on our podcast. You know, my background is virology and immunology. I mean, I know about vaccines and I know about coronavirus, from my past, but
yeah, Lou is a doctor, everybody. I mean, we get the cream of the crop on this show.
How many podcasts with comedians have had a discussion and had nobody that had any idea what they were talking about? This might be a first.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that sound you hear of foreheads hitting the desks. Look, you've got the new variants. So it's everything that you're talking about here this morning. And what has the NHLPA agreed to in terms of maximum number of games in a stretch? Is it, you know, can they do four games in five nights?
If that's a question, they've never agreed to three in a row.
Yeah.
That's what they've never done. They've never done the AHL model.
No. And, you know, this minor league schedule that the NHL has, which is really what these two games in a row were, seven in a row for the between the Coyotes and Blues, it just makes for some nasty hockey by the time the third game comes along, right?
I've actually enjoyed it. I've enjoyed these wars. Yeah, because I think the kind of, you know, obviously there's hatred among our old Patrick Division friends. Yeah. But some of these new rivals are propping up where you get, you know, Florida's fighting Columbus, you know, I mean, dropping gloves. It builds up animosity. And I actually really do enjoy the second game right back to back. I was talking on a couple of radio stations. I don't know how long you can do that when you sell tickets. I know people would want to see McDavid two games in a row, but when the Wild come to town, I don't know how many people, let's go tomorrow. You know, this was so much fun tonight. But yeah, I kind of enjoyed it. I was just, you know, I don't know. I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. And what I don't understand, And I think we might have different opinions, but I don't know why the NHL and zero, you know, why did they just donate, you know, $10 million to a food bank or to the Red Cross or somebody and just vaccine everybody? And, you know, I don't, is that, as a doctor, is that just not protocol, or what, is there something wrong with doing that, or why don't we just do that?
Well, you know, certainly there is the priority list. In my day job, I'm on the health command for one of the tribal nations I work with, and so I've been vaccinated. There is that priority list, but at the same time, look, I mean, the NFL has opened up their stadiums. Dodger Stadium is open. Why aren't we doing something like that? Drive-through, empty parking lots. Why are we not doing that? As I have said many times, this pandemic is not over until the final positive case disappears. That's what we're up against.
Lou, you mentioned the bubble and how well that did work.
Yeah.
Does that pretty much prove the point that if you keep the outside world out and you don't let people come and go, that it will cut down on all positive cases?
Yes. At some point, all pandemics fizzle out. The biology of it is that the virus will only infect, and kill a certain percentage. Otherwise, it becomes extinct. It's not that it's a thought process, it's just the biology. So if you limit exposure to the outside world, so to speak, outside that bubble, then in fact the bubble is clean as long as no one new comes in. That's the deal with many of the communities that I work with here in the Southwest. They shut down, a hard lockdown, hard stay-at-home orders, and I was only allowed back into some of the communities once I had been vaccinated. So this in and out, in and out, in and out. Look at what the Caps did. Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and who were the other two that were sitting around a bar in a hotel without a mask? That
Orlov and Samsonov.
Yeah, that's it. Defied the COVID protocol, and paid the price for it. That is how this all happens and how this all continues. They're out doing that. They come back into the team bubble, if you will, and whatever they were exposed to, they're bringing into the locker room. It's just crazy. Absolute craziness.
Well, and I think that was a big question, was the players were worried that a bubble was going to exist for some part of the regular season. And I think it's still up in the air is what they've agreed to for the playoffs. But both Bettman and for everybody involved in the league, is that a bubble will not exist again. As far as for a prolonged period, they're not going to do it. They're just not going to make the players go through it. Do you think at that point when they had that decision to make, like, we're not going to do the bubble, that was a chance to, you know, maybe postpone the season or do something differently? I think once they went forward without a bubble, right now it's the Wild West. Like, once you open that Pandora's box, you can't close it.
That's right, Andy. That's exactly how I've been treating this from the beginning. I have said that they should have, from my, again, it's entirely my opinion, but I think sit this season out and then come back in the fall. We're already hearing that there are twice as many doses of the various vaccines available and will be available by the time August ends. So you may have greater than 70 or 80% of the population vaccinated. Because here's my thing, and I'm not trying to be the Debbie Downer here, but you start a season, dead people and sick people don't buy tickets to next season's games. How I looked at it. So now you've got you've got this season that you're trying to put on, and now next season, you know, half of your season ticket base is gone, whether by mortality or by advanced morbidity. And so, what do you want to do? Before the season started, the Vegas Golden Knights were grousing. That's hyperbole. They were saying that they needed to have games because they could not go two seasons without fans or some kind of hockey going on and fans in the stands. That's the Vegas Golden Knights, or they can't last more than two seasons.
I think that was everybody's fear, that they just couldn't, they could not play. But I thought, well, they're going to lose money anyway. I don't know if you missed my question exactly how I put it, but that was, I was just kind of like, why didn't they just donate? Instead of all the tests and this and that and other thing, couldn't they have just donated?
Yes.
To a hospital, and then everyone got vaccinated, and then they play the season. And I know you're saying, oh my God, they're skipping ahead of a bus driver. But think of all the people who are stuck at home. They're actually giving some entertainment value, and maybe would keep somebody home an extra week and not want to go out. Like, well, at least the Bruins are on. I won't go to a bar. You know, it kind of almost a public service, and you're donating money. It just seems like a charade of this and that and the test. It's like, you know, I'm happy they're playing, believe me. I don't care if the Penguins are the AHL team and they're playing. I just wish there was it seemed like the solution was to maybe even start in April and have everybody vaccinated and play 30 games. I don't know.
Well, I truly believe for answers. If the TV deal ran through the next year or the next 2 years, they wouldn't have played this year. Because the rumor was they had 6 or 7 owners that were a hard no. And if they had gotten to 10 or 11, then it would have been a real discussion. Do we play or do we not play? So they were very close to having a very real discussion and not playing. And the pushover was the TV ratings. And why they won't shut down this year, no matter what, is because the ratings are up. The ratings are up and their deal is up this year. So no matter what happens, they're going to finish this season, no matter what amalgamation of a playoff we see, because they can't. They've been dead set on, we're playing this year for the TV deal and we're going to finish it.
I know Lou has to go. I would ask him two real quick questions. One, sure. is the contract, because you really are a doctor, is the contact tracing, is that excessive? I mean, do they need to go that far away? Like, oh, he saw somebody down the street, now he said out 2 weeks, or they're just being overcautious?
It's an abundance of caution. That's as a scientist. Look, you need to have an idea as to with whom you've had some kind of contact and who's had contact with you. So the contact tracing is really a necessity, and we're finally getting a handle on it now.
Okay. And secondly, because I know you love your Rangers, what's going on, Lou? I had them in your fine publication. I had them pick fourth.
So did I.
Lou. I mean, look. Can you go back and edit that out? Can you flip a few teams?
Look, I think it's my gut. They're poorly coached. Yes, they're young, but there's far too much talent there, and it's being wasted. And they're 4-7-3, and it's about to be wait until next season.
Do you think there's a chance they'll come on a little bit, because they do have a lot of young talent?
Not with the coach, yeah. David Quinn. I just don't know that he's the coach that this roster needs. Last night was a prime example. I mean, there was no life, listless, lackadaisical, you know, whatever alliteration you want to come up with. That was an embarrassing effort last night. And when your fourth line is scoring your goals, it's just, I know Panarin's out with an injury, but there's just no life in this team. Well, and I've been following him since 63. And this is just awful.
Oh, Lou, I feel bad. Lou, but I know you got to run. You're a busy man. But thank you so much for coming on, Lou. And please stop back in. We'll talk some unhappier times.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm not Mr. Sunshine. All right, guys. Hey, listen,
Lou, thank
good to
you.
Meet y'all. All right,
thanks, Lou. Thanks.
We'll see you next time.
Great. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Lou Lafredo right there, everybody. Just what more can you say? You can't get more of an expert.
Yeah,
he's the editor at the Pro Hockey News, and he's a viral doctor. So, yeah. You know, well, all right, go ahead, Brady.
Well, I was just going to say, what is the takeaway from what Lou had to say? Andy says they won't cancel the season no matter what because of the TV situation. But we see a mounting amount of cases coming up every week, it seems like. Do you think there's a scenario where they would have to cancel, or can we just keep rolling?
I think they're going to keep running through. I had a few, we how conversations go, and Fraser, you've been doing this forever. That's why you're the radio legend. You know, it went different ways. I guess no one's really combating it any different way than everything's either canceled or just playing and ignoring it. Yeah, you know.
Well, the problem is they're doing both. They're canceling stuff and they're playing and ignoring
it. Right.
And the competitive balance of the league right now is completely messed up. I mean, just look at the Dallas Stars. I mean, the real problem is that we worried about last year about having a play-in, and will a team that doesn't deserve to win or a team that had an easier road, will they just walk through this year? Very possible that happens, because there's teams that literally, I don't know how they're going to make up the games. And if it comes down to winning percentage and they had a bad first 2 months, it's over.
So it
really could be a very weird, I think they're going to have it. I think they're going to keep pushing forward. But the problem is when you do both, when you don't just push forward, and you also cancel, which is what America did for the past year. We didn't stay in, but we also didn't stay at home. Like, we were out, but we weren't. You know what I mean? When you do both, it takes longer, and it's more of a mess. And I think that's – the NHL is kind of a necessary evil. They needed the TV deal. I know I sound like an evil billionaire economist here, but, the league needed money.
Yeah.
We needed this ugly year. So maybe it's going to be ugly, and maybe Chicago makes the playoffs. But,
Well, as I wrote that in Pro Hockey News, and we talked about it last week, what a difference a goaltender makes, though.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, when you have Subban, you're looking at the lottery, you get Lehkonen in there, and all of a sudden, Patrick Kane's up for the Hart Trophy, and things are rolling.
Why do you need a lottery when all seven of your new players are great? There's a new Chicago Blackhawk that's in the Calder race every 3 or 4 games.
And I wanted to get this in because I'm happy for Frage. I like how you got the juice. I think that's how you say his name, the juice. DJOOS. I thought he was an up and comer in Washington, found a favorite, and he came to the Duckies. But he just scored a goal for Detroit. I think he's a guy that's going to be on your team for a couple of years, hopefully.
Yeah, I do too. Defense. I like that.
I really like that guy. Yeah. I was like, well, he's there, another little piece to the puzzle, a little piece getting there.
We keep adding here little by little, but I do like him, and you're right. I think that's a good addition.
Yeah.
We got some decent talent there. We're still in that growing phase.
It's funny because I picked guys I like watching. Like last year, I had Connor Garland and different people, and then this year I put in my little list for Pro Hockey News, and I had Devonnie Smith, and it ends up I think they shipped him back on the taxi squad or somewhere.
Man,
I guess my opinions don't fly with Stevie Y, but but here's
him too.
Yeah, he got a pro bear. Does anybody here's before we get some real news or some other stuff, but on the waiver, those who cleared this week. Mr. James Neal, Mr. October, James Neal, Paul Byron cleared, and Red Wing, the Kaiser cleared. So some of it's just paperwork, but you can steal somebody if you want to. Big trade this week, Paquette and Galchenyuk to Carolina for Dzingel. So that means basically Carolina gets Paquette, because then Galchenyuk stripped straight to Toronto.
Galchenyuk is a much traveled individual, isn't he?
It's like he's a middle act.
Yeah,
we're different every weekend.
At first, I thought it was terrible. And then I'm like, you know what? The Leafs will just waive him in 2 weeks. Like, what are they like? They just needed some depth for right now. I do think that this is just like a little pickup, but I don't get it. I mean, Galchenyuk is disappointed constantly. That 30 goal season was what, like 7 years ago now? I didn't know when it was, like 6 years ago.
2015, yeah.
Yeah, it was a long time. So he disappointed in Pittsburgh. He's been consistently disappointing, but it goes back to how Bergeron or Bergevin in Montreal, the vision he had. I mean, he traded him. What was it? It was he traded him for Domi, and then he traded Domi for Anderson. So he really traded stocks up consistently over the years. He saw it early, but yeah, that I don't think he's going to add much to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
No, but Paquette certainly adds to Carolina.
Carolina, yeah,
that's a great. It's funny because I woke up half asleep. I saw just like Friedman was like Paquette on move, and I'm like, oh my god, you know, I'm like, oh, there we, I'm like there we go, Penguins getting tougher already, but it wasn't meant to be. Let's dive into. I know Andy was on it. Let's dive into the Arizona story a little bit. I know Fred, if you want to bow out because they're technically your boss.
Yeah, I got to be careful on that one.
not a pretty picture in Arizona, but a little bit. And I'm not here to be smudge the reporter, but I don't know. She's always, you know, there's dirt in every single organization. There's dirt, and some ex-employee doesn't like the way they were treated. I don't know. And she seems to be really good at these kind of stories. Like, has she ever written about a real hockey story? You know, I don't know.
Well, I think that's why they got her. I think the Athletic got her to be a needly, you know, to write these kind of articles. And to be honest, the thing that separates it, and when I first read the article, I thought, oh, it's going to be, you know, some sort of harassment went on or something like that. The same old story that we keep reading. But I think the reason why this is glaring is for two reasons. And Joe, you and me talked about this. They were late on, I forget the player's bonus check. That's something that you just burned yourself with his agent and probably a few other team members' agents. They were late on a bonus check to the point where they had to, you know, kind of threaten legal action. That really can't happen in the league. It hasn't happened since two lockouts ago where players didn't get their checks on time. That's a really rare thing. And then the other thing is that, you know, being Arizona has had trouble over the years getting corporate sponsorship and corporate partners. And I guess, you know, they were taking some liberties with some of their corporate partners and their vendors. And if you do that in a town, that can really be the beginning of the unraveling. When you stick a vendor, you know, there's only so many vendors in Phoenix. I know Phoenix is a huge city, but there's only so many people who can supply an arena. And there's only so many people that will be willing to name their gates or one of your gates after their company. And if you start messing with that relationship, and that's where I think it was a serious article. There was a lot that was just personal opinion and conjecture, but those issues I thought were pretty important.
Yeah. I think it says a few different things. Three or four, actually. One, I think it could be the first step in the league having to take the team over again, you know, which Bettman would not want to do. But kind of Bettman's stubbornness is why the team is still there. I think, you know, I mean, you know, he's up there now. I love Gary Bettman, but he's up there. I think the next guy is going to see that team move to Houston or Kansas City, because I think that I don't see them getting an arena in Scottsdale if he's burning this many people in that town. I don't see that happening. And I think the next guy just cutting the next commissioner just saying, you know what? Houston's a bigger city. We want to move a team to the central anyway to realignment. Let's just do it. On a good note, I think it makes Rick Tocchet look even better because Tocchet is, I mean, the team is right there for the playoffs.
Yeah, they're playing
and,
well.
And he's, you know, and it's a mess. And what I came away with was, The negative I came away with on the team level was they really got a inexperienced. And now maybe it seems like a lot of people wanted the Pittsburgh job. Maybe nobody wanted the Arizona job, but it seemed like they really did not get a good GM and maybe a proper G. I mean, you know, I know I'm not trying to, I mean, Brian Burke probably would straighten a lot of things out over there, or some of his, maybe not his ilk, because he's like a genius Harvard lawyer, but it seemed like somebody could, like a Dean Lombardi, could maybe do it right there. And this guy, I'm not quite sure about.
Yeah, that was two scandals ago, so it's hard to remember. But yeah, John Chayka being gone because he lost them all those draft picks and stuff.
No, but I mean, the new guy came off as like trying to bully a female. He was kind of like trying to bully a female reporter, which that's never a good look.
Well, yeah. Also, he's a bit of a he's an interesting guy, Bill Armstrong. I don't think he's a crazy hockey guy. He's one of those guys that like sleeps at the rink, even though he's the GM. It's like, you don't got to get up and do stretches. Like, he's really, he's very intense. He's an intense dude. And I kind of like him and I like his quotes, but you're right. Sometimes he's a little too intense for that position.
Yeah. I think it's almost like if he doesn't attack the reporter back, maybe it's almost a different, I know she's only there to write a hatchet piece, but you don't have to throw gas on the fire. But exactly. I don't know, but I don't know. I just think it was a little, I don't know. It's one of those things, you know, it's kind of like kicking a team when they're down. I don't know. I mean, do you send her into, do you send her to Montreal to find the 10 disgruntled secretaries?
Well, I'll put my tin foil on, but I feel like she was probably pressured by the agent of the player who we forgot his name. Maybe it's good we forgot his name, but we'll just leave it be. But I think she was probably that they might have put some gas on.
Yeah,
said, hey, make this public.
They couldn't find someone that didn't make it from the AHL. You know, it was complaint to like, oh, we got to find. I don't know. And this is not a knock on female reporters either, because I mean, Helene Elliott if she's not in the Hall of Fame, she should be.
She should be.
There's some great report. I just don't like that ilk of hockey reporter. And they're out there, and there's some of the ESPN guys now, because they got rid of the good ones like Burnside. They're only there to stir the woke pot. It just kind of makes me sick. All right, happier topics. I guess maybe not in Buffalo. Sorry, BB. But
wow,
Frey, they need a new. I never call for someone's head, but they need a new coach.
Yeah, you were saying that, and I think we all. Obviously having their issues the last few years, but we all expected them to be better this year. And they had some additions to the team that we thought were going to really help them. And it hasn't helped. Although the COVID's hit them, but I think at some point you might have to look at the coaching.
I mean, I gave them the benefit of the doubt a little bit, but I looked at that team and they're just terrible. And I have to think, that if their coach wasn't like the GM of a soccer team the last 5 years, it was actually an NHL coach. I mean, they have more talent than the New Jersey Devils. And I know I'm always, stroking Lindy Ruff, but I mean, you don't think he could do a better job? You think Michael Therrien could do a better job? You don't think Mike Yeo could do a better job than this guy?
I think we've hit a theme right now with owners that overstep their GMs a little bit. And the Pegula family is, Buffalo's built off them, right? Like they are Buffalo, but I think he's too hands-on. I like we said before, he's a really brash guy. I just think that he wants a coach and a GM that will listen to him. And that's what he's getting right now. And so instead of having a team run by hockey minds, it's a team run by a billionaire, and they don't run them the same way.
There were so many defensive lapses. I thought Letang got a haircut and was playing for the same.
Well,
I mean, people skating away from the puck.
I feel bad for Taylor Hall. He's playing.
Yeah,
okay.
I do too.
He only has one goal. He's got like a point per game, but he's playing okay. He's trying. I mean, that team. Did you see the one fan message their Facebook? And he asked it. His aunt died, and he got her a cardboard cutout. In the arena, and he asked him to take it down because he doesn't deserve to see this.
That's funny.
Of all this, though, the Penguins will probably go 2-6 against them.
I know.
Wow.
Speaking of, how about the Devils, though? I mean, and I know Lou was upset. Lou Lafredo, pro hockey news guy we had on earlier. You probably heard, unless you skipped ahead by accident. you know, the coach, I'll tell you, he was upset on the Zoom press conference. They go, what do you think about the effort? Well, first of all, Kreider got into a fight, and then he complained about the effort. And then the coach came in the Zoom room, and he's like, we're going to talk about it before the game or before practice, during practice, after practice, and he stormed out.
And I don't know if you guys saw, but did you see the news that broke a couple hours ago about the Rangers?
No, what happened?
No.
Trouba, 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
It's over. I mean,
wow.
That's, you know, hey, D'Angelo was really, really expendable when Trouba was playing, right? Now, all of a sudden, hey, I think they might go back on he's played his last game as the Ranger. They might need to.
Well, what do you think the problem is in New York? I mean, obviously, everyone thought they were going to have a better season, that they had all this young talent, and it hasn't worked at all so far.
I don't know, because he was not playing King Henry hockey in net, but things seem to have fallen apart emotionally for that franchise since King Henry's not there.
Yeah, they don't have much of an identity. And, you know, I agree with the thought that Quinn isn't the guy. And when you look at that market, how many times have they had kind of a green coach? It's not really a place to learn or to grow older and get into the game. Quinn's a younger. I know he's been around the game for a while, but I just think, I mean, it was Vigneault before him, and I mean, Torch was there before him. I mean, Tom Rennie, who was like, you know, a Sather disciple, you know, before him. I think I might be missing one guy. I mean, it's a market for a coach who is really established, and I don't want to throw Quinn under the bus, but I agree that they look terrible. Like, they only look good on the power play.
Do you think they'd be doing better if they still had Vigneault?
I think absolutely. If they had Vigneault, would say, yeah, we'd be better off with him. I mean, yeah, I think he's the top 3-4 coaches in the league.
Yeah, he amazed me how good he did it. My stock for him went up so high when he went into New York and did great. I think I have very high marks on Vigneault as a coach. This is going to sound like a knock, and it is a knock, but it's not meant to be a knock as a jingoist or whatever the word would be. Most National Hockey League teams don't do great when all of their leaders are European. They just don't. And the top of those guys are Zibanejad and Panarin. And I don't know. One of your two best guys almost has to be a Canadian or an American. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm ignorant, but it seems like that's just, I'm just looking at history. It seems like the Euro teams, except for the Red Wings, pretty much, you know, except for the Red Wings.
But what did they do? Yeah. They created a clique. They didn't bring two. They didn't even bring three or four. They're all five.
Iserman, Federer, not that era, I just mean in the Witch, Zetterberg, Lindstrom era. Those, the big three, those guys were European. But other than that, it's really hard to think back of any great team that was led by the top two or three guys as European or Russian. Really, it is. If I'm wrong, there haven't been
a lot of European captains, right? I mean, that's one thing. But I also think that it's about creating two or three cliques in the room that hang out, because you don't want anybody to feel left out. And I think that when you look at a Ranger, like the Rangers room back in, you know, when I used to go to games and I had a few friends that would hang out with them, and Holig would be around, and Orr, it was like the Canadian guys and North American guys, like they kind of hang out, the European guys hang out. It's good to have a good mix. And I agree with you, Joe, if the top echelon is just a few European players and everybody else is Canadian and North American, that kind of separates the top from the rest. And I agree that, like, if you don't have that good mixture of in the room, that, you know, it's just one of those things where if guys are closer and they're hanging out, the team's usually playing better. They're usually having more fun. And when you have a mixture of like three different cliques of guys that all get along, everything's fun. When there's guys that feel like they're left out, they don't get to go because they don't know Russian, so that steakhouse won't be fun for them. When things like that start happening, that's when it gets messed up.
Absolutely. And I just think the style of play a little bit is, you know, you is kind of like offense, go, go, go. And then what slows down, or hey, Panarin's hurt. So now it's, you know, Zibanejad kind of on an island with a couple younger skilled guys. It's like go, go. So you just can't rear back and hit somebody, or the style of play just lend itself to maybe climbing out of a hole. And then nowadays, hey, things go bad. I mean, nowadays, there's no way to climb out of it. Like, you know, Gino, he just can't go eat sushi and forget about it, have a couple sakis. Maybe Max Talbot comes to town. They laugh. Like, Gino, you're not going to the net enough. Ha, 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 ha. Boom. Next night he goes to the net. Or for these guys, they can't go out to Brighton Beach and go, you know, drink vodka until 5 a.m. and wake up. Ah, tough practice. Ah, we'll go. There's no bonding anymore. They're just back in the hotel trying not to get fined for looking at each other. You know, I mean, there's no way to kind of mentally climb out of a hole this year.
No, but I think it's almost, it's old school. They're going to, I mean, they're still together. They're going to be playing cards. They're going to be around each other.
That's what happened to Ovechkin.
They're not allowed to congregate in each other's rooms after it really is like junior hockey. They're not allowed to congregate. They're not allowed to congregate in each other's rooms, and they're not allowed to. But I'm saying there's still a lot of travel time, and I think that there is, like, obviously they have team meetings. There's times where they're allowed to be around each other, but they do have a curfew, and they're definitely not allowed at the bar without masks. I think that's what made the Capitals this year kind of elevate. You know,
but I mean, like, yeah. You know, but I mean, they're not going to scores. You know, they're not going. They're not team bonding. There's no rookie meal isn't happening. You know, I just mean there's no real way to bond and kind of get a team atmosphere if you're having trouble getting one together or to climb out of it.
Tough year to be a rookie.
Yeah,
it really is. I think it hurts with guys like Lafreniere and guys like that who are probably going to be good. But you're right; they don't really have that bonding ability this year to get to know their teammates and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm not going to make an excuse. I'm not going to make excuses for Malkin, but I mean, think about it. His wife and kid. He probably has a mansion, I'm sure. His wife and kid are in Florida. So he comes home with a -2. What's he supposed to do? Sit in a mansion. It's like The Shining, you know. I mean, look, when Jágr was the captain of the Penguins, you know, he was a Euro captain, and in Marty, there was a strong Czech contingent, and they were a good team. They weren't a great team, and you knew the way they were going to play. You know, it's almost like, you know, to win the. I mean, very few. I mean, even the Red Wings of the Russian Five, they had their Russian splash, if you will, splash, right? But they played at North American hockey. It's hard to play Euro hockey and win the cup.
Well, yeah, and they also played together. That was such a unique situation. I just kind of was using the parallel of, like, they created a room where it's like, yeah, like, you don't necessarily need all the guys to be on the same page. And I think that's why, like, you know, Gonchar, you know, being in Pittsburgh for Malkin was so huge, was to give him somebody to communicate with. Because even, you know, when you speak the language well, I mean, it's Malkin's classic for not learning or being able to say his teammates' names. They are their numbers. Like, that's Gino. I think he's gotten a little better over the years, as people say with it. But Joe Vitale has a story that he was always 41 or 46. Get out of the way, 46. You're in my way, 46. Give me a drink, 46. Like, he was 46. He wasn't Joe. He was 46. And so and that's not Gino being awful. It's just Gino being Gino. He's a Russian guy. You know, he's got a lot to do. He can't say the names properly, so it just says the numbers sometimes. So I totally see what Joe's saying. You wish everybody could have an Yzerman.
Well, you're all together. I think the Penguins. I'm probably say this coming up on a DV thing, but I think they rue the day let Gonchar slide. And if they wanted to get rid of Jack Martin, just to kind of, you know, put a little fire under Sully's ass or whatever, just to change up a little bit. Okay, Jacques Martin's been around the block a million times. It's not going to matter to him. But I don't understand why they got rid of Gonchar. Because all that's happened is Gino loses his biggest asset. He's been terrible this year. And their power play stunk. And I don't really understand. Reardon, what, he made Letang, who's supposed to be Jesus Christ anyway, good? No. To me, Reardon's one of the most overrated coaches in hockey. He made Washington terrible. And then he comes back to our team, and what's he done? Nothing. For Reardon? I don't know. I'd rather have Gonchar, period. And plus, Gonchar probably could have played instead of Churchman when we were down to our 15th defenseman. So I don't know your thoughts on that, Andy, or Frazier. Well,
just to spin it in one little thing here, and this is something that, you know, I'm not rooting for, but it's just the reality of the league. When you look at really great coaches that win, their shelf life after they win is like 3 years, 4 years. You know, Laviolette and Tortorella, it's like a year and a half, 2 years. You know, like these guys, they win and they move on. I have a little bit of a fear if the Penguins keep up with this type of play, where they played actually great in the first period last night, but then they fell right back into everything that they've been doing terrible for the second and the third. Besides Jari, he was great all game. I think that, and I'm not being alarmist and saying it's Sullivan's fault or he's going to get fired. I just think that we might be very close to the end, and we don't know it yet with Mike Sullivan.
Oh, I think we are. And I don't think it's, I think we're very close to the end with Sullivan. And I also think that Sullivan is so not the problem that it's,
yeah, I agree.
It's, yeah. That it's a hunt. And Sullivan is you know, Badger Bob. He's the Beatles. He's, you know, he's the Beatles. He's Mean Joe Green. There was nothing before him. There's everything after him. But besides Bob, so you can't knock Bob Johnson whatsoever. But Sullivan's been the best coach the Penguins have ever had. I know we had Scotty Bowman. Scotty flew in from Buffalo. Scotty just, you know, showed off his ring, showed up. And I love Scotty Bowman, but he didn't actually coach the Penguins. And Disco Dan, you know, I could have coached the Penguins when Sid and Gino were putting up 150 points a year. So, I mean, please. I mean,
yeah. And he really only, I mean, he had the 1 year where they won the cup, but other than that, the playoffs were a consistent disaster under Dan
Bilesma. He played Jerome Iginla on the third line.
Well, you know, things didn't work out the second practice, so he figured, you know, what winger at the time that was incredible, well, probably Brian Gibbons was playing well, so yeah, go ahead and throw him with Sid. It's sad to say, and I know I mention him every podcast and I defend him too much, but it's sort of the tort school of, hey, you need to get over the hump. I'll get you over the hump. But after I get you over the hump, you guys might not like me. And I'm not saying that's happened in Pittsburgh. Not you guys like the fans, you guys like the players. And I'm not saying that's true. I have no evidence of that. But when the whole team stinks in the defensive zone, and when the whole team is barely ready for the beginning of the game, when it's the whole team, sometimes that's the clear sign that they've kind of might have lost the room.
Now this is going to sound like you know, another Gino apology. And it's not. And Mr. Madden, if you're listening, you don't need to attack me. but one of the only things I've disagreed with in his whole tenure is he should have kept Rust with Gino. I don't see the point of having one super line and then having Gino's line stink, because they were pretty good when Rusty was there. I mean, Rusty's lead the team in every single category, and I don't see having one great line. It never works in hockey. One great line never wins anything, and Sully usually goes by that theory. So I don't know why he always eggs are one basket. If he wants Gino trade, I don't know what the deal is there, but that seems to be the big problem this season. And Zucker, the first thing I would do is try to move Zucker. That's what I would do. But let's we talk a lot of Penguins. Any thoughts on that, Frage? And then
I always like Sullivan, but I noticed, just as an outsider, I watched both those games. I watched Sunday's game and last night's game. And I just noticed a vast difference in the Penguins. I think Washington played a little better last night than they did on Sunday. But I just thought the Penguins looked great on Sunday and then not so good last night. They did look disorganized from the get-go. And that's just my general overview.
And you're 100% right. And when you don't score on a 5-on-3, you never win.
Well, that's right.
In the first period, if you go 0-for-3 on the power play,
two pipes, no good.
But they were clicking on Sunday. On Sunday, I thought you looked real good.
Yeah, you know, they're a 500. They're a 500 hockey team.
Before we move on, they're exactly 500, Joe. They're 18-72. Wins, 1,873 losses, and 383 ties. So they're actually one game below 500 in history. Wow. And I got to give the great Bob Grove credit with that stat, because he's the sweetest.
And I've lived a good life, because I'll tell you, the first when they wore blue, when my grandpa was listening to them. There's no way anyone would ever think that they'd ever be a 500 team. They might have been a 500 team if they moved, if they were in Dallas, but they're never going to be a 500 team in Pittsburgh. I'll tell you that. Speaking of disappointing, the Vancouver Canucks ownership has given the dreaded vote of confidence to the GM and coach, who's, you know, he's looking for
Benning.
Benning, and then Travis Green was hotter, was hot crap like 3 months ago, and now people are like he may not be renewed. But the vote of confidence. Your thoughts on the Vancouver Canucks, Fraser Smith? I know me and you both thought Vancouver was off to bigger and better things.
I picked them to finish first before the season started. I just thought they looked so good in the playoffs last year. And they did look good in the playoffs last year. And they have all these great young players. I think they may have let the wrong goalie go. I will say that. But I just don't think they've measured up this year, obviously. I don't know what the problem is. I'm surprised. I thought they were going to have a real good year this year. And I remember we had Ian Bagg on, and he's the biggest Canucks fan that we know, and he felt the same way. I think it looked like they were headed for a great season, and it's kind of like we were saying about the Rangers. All of a sudden, they're not, and I don't get it, really.
I'm gonna let Andy step in real quick. I think that's a room that's fractured. I think Tanev was the leader in that room. I think Markstrom exposed or saved a lot of bad defense. And if you play bad defense anyway, and then you lose Tanev, who was your best defenseman, I know Andy doesn't like Stetcher, but they just fell apart there. And I don't know. But I do like the vote of confidence in the sense of the owner saying, this year, there's no fans anyway, basically what they said. We're not gonna trade people just to make sports radio happy, you know.
And Vancouver is, you know, I would be willing to bet they'll be the last building to let people, the fans in. So like, when fans do come back in, Vancouver will definitely be. I mean, Vancouver is Canada's Seattle. You know what I mean? That's the way the city is. And it's beautiful. It's a great city, but they're very health conscious. But I agree with everything that's been said. And I just think that they're young and they're soft and they get hurt a lot. Like all the things of a young team that's not great in the corners. And look at all these other Canadian teams, and even the one that stinks, they're tough to play against. Like Ottawa's not tough to play against goal wise, but they're tough in the corners, and they can possess the puck if you're soft. And Vancouver to me looks real, real soft. As great as Hughes, I mean, Hughes had a toe drag move in front of the net that I'd like never seen before this week. I mean, he's incredible. And Patterson's obviously got a lot going on, but he's part of the room fracture there is you got to make him happy. I guess he's getting squirrely there a bit. So, yeah, Vancouver's a big question mark. I don't know which way they're going to go, but it doesn't look like it's up right now.
Joe mentioned something. Just one more thing quickly is that you mentioned last week, I think, that Demko had a great playoffs. But beyond that, you know, what did we know about him, you know? And I think Markstrom going was a big deal.
It was huge. And the other one, you know, Ferland not being there. I know I say that probably people in Vancouver are sick of hearing it, but that's a big loss, man. That was a man. That was a guy that protected a lot of guys. He could score some goals. He played third line. He wasn't a goon. When you lose a guy like that, it's tough. It's tough, especially when you're seeing everybody eight times in a row and they all know that you're the pretty boys and, oh, you're Vancouver. No, we're going to knock your head off. I feel bad for him because I like some of those young kids and not a good situation. I will do the awards, and I got a great Jágr story because it is the great Jaromír Jágr's 49th birthday this week. You know his league's playing just so Jágr can play. Jágr probably made the country make hockey legal so he could play. All right, here's the awards. Music coming up very, very shortly. We're gonna have all the bells and whistles. We'll be back in the studio very shortly. But the Howie. We got two good ones for the Howie. Getzlaf ripping Berkey. Did you see that tweet? It was the best. He goes, Berkey, welcome back to I'm glad you're joining the Penguins because you sure weren't very good on television.
Wow.
You gotta love Superman.
And you gotta love how a star player like that like that shows how cool Burke is that Getzlaf felt, you know, sent a text like that when he got a job. Yeah, I love the fact he's part of the Penguins. It makes me happy every second.
It makes me happy that he might Getz might just take a quick flyer in Pittsburgh. Aww. You know how much I love Getz. Like, you talk about third lines. Oh God, love Getz.
Scratch Gino.
I love Superman. And the other Howie, how about Tuukka Rask? The game's tied. Pulling the goal. He's going for the extra point.
All right.
You gotta love that. That's like the old, last game of the year, trying to get in the playoffs, go for the win. No one needs a tie. Tuukka. That was funny.
So good.
Oh.
Yeah, that was cool.
Boston. The Paul Kariya Award goes to last night. Jakub Vrána took the high stick to the face and then scores the goal. The dirtbag, I got to give it to Garnett Hathaway of the Capitals, just running over Jari. You know, Berkey had to be pissed no one broke his face. But I said on DV, maybe they were afraid of COVID because Hathaway spits on people. So maybe they were afraid of getting COVID from him. The Mario, I guess this will be this kind of predate. The Mario Lemieux in one. This guy gets the Mario and the Claude. Zub of Ottawa gets the Claude. First goal ever is a Claude Lemieux.
Yeah, how about that?
In that big turnaround game. Yeah. Toronto, what are they thinking?
What a game.
Yeah. And Wagner also with a Claude. Skirt, two Penguins. John Marino got worked by Cizikas. I mean, Cizikas looked like Mark Messier. What was that about? And then, of course, Gino. I don't know what that was. No excuse for that one on Backstrom. We have a Bob Probert, the most unlikely of Proberts, Patrick Laine with the Bob Probert. Sticking up for a teammate, too. Sticking up for Roslick got destroyed. And then Patrick Laine comes in to save the day. You got to love that. I don't have a D.O. You guys want to pick a D.O.? You guys go pick a D.O.
How about Jared Anderson Dolan?
Oh, from the Kings. All right, on. Yeah. Kings look good. Like Quickie looking good last night.
He did look good. Look at the old Quickie.
Speaking of the old Quickie, we have a bunch of saves. We got Reine with the pad on Mantha. Matt Murray with the scorpion leg kick on Adam Lowry. Flower on Getzlaf with the back, puck hit him in the back. Jari on Panic. Vasilevsky with the toe on, Varlamov with the toe save on Jake. Halak on Lafreniere, which was an incredible save. Bernier with the save on Duchesne. That was the Bernier of the Wings. Remember that against Nashville, Duchesne. Duchesne couldn't believe it. He thought he scored. Duchesne should know better. He never scores. But last night, I gave the save of the week, but you guys can decide. Quickie with the glove on Zuccarello last night was vintage. Vintage, Jonathan Quick.
Yeah, well,
I'm going to give everything to Matt Murray. I'm sorry, Frazier. I didn't mean to say, but like Matt Murray, the past five games, all of a sudden, it's like, wish we had him back.
He is like playing Murray, well.
You never know what you're going to get. I think he's been above 930 save percentage for like four games in a row now. I mean, he's playing well.
He is playing well. That's right.
All right. Tons of goons. We got Lundberg, Barclay, Goudreau. Two Sam Lafferty hits on big Zdeno Chara. The first one on Sunday blew up the screen like Batman, like pow, the screen exploded. You knew Berkey loved that. It was like Lafferty said to show off the new boss, like, I'm going to pick the toughest guy in the prison yard and knock him dead. I tell you what, I never saw Chara back down on anyone. He kind of disappeared after both those hits, two games in a row. Kind of unbelievable. Godzilla kind of taking a step back. Marchand crushed Simic, kind of a cheap shot. Evander Kane versus Riley Smith. That was fun. Riley Smith stepping up. Larson, two games for hitting Sanford's head. I don't know if you guys saw this. Truba. And Truba would be such a great ad for the Truba's. See, that's what you who what? Oh, you know, we oh, you know, Letang, $7 million. No, give Truba $7 million. Here's what you get. Truba destroyed that Zorbio kid, and then ragdoll McAvoy went to step up. He just ragdolled McAvoy for 5 minutes and threw him down and walked away like Patrick Swayze. It was amazing. Did you see that? I mean, He kind of took on the whole Bruin team. Troop is a man. Frederick versus Lemieux fight. Nick Ritchie just bulls over Shesterkin. This is it. Hagel crushes Roslovic, then Line steps in. Coleman versus Gudis. Gord versus Horny. The old Panthers versus Lightning battle. Graves crushes Glass. We didn't talk about the Avalanche. So the Avalanche last night, no McCarr, no Landeskog. Look very good against the Golden Knights.
They did look good, yeah.
Jamal Smith versus Verhaeghe, Gudas versus Gord, Muzzin fought Brady Tkachuk. Good fight last night, Kolesar versus Gilbert. And then last night, like we said, Zibanejad crushed by McLeod, and Kreider saving his honor.
I saw the Kolesar fight. That was a pretty good one.
It's a good fight.
I think it was the best week of fights the NHL's had in a long time. I think I got to give it to Frederick. Frederick was throwing like crazy. Like his hands were all over the place. That was a lot of fun to watch. And I don't know the numbers this week, but I know fighting's been up. And after watching this week, I'm sure it went up even more. There's a lot of scrapping going on.
And then he was talking trash in the box too. He was one of the guys I picked. I like to watch in pro hockey news. I said talk. He starts bad mouthing people. It's great. I loved it. I just really loved Trouba. Just absolutely destroyed Sorokin, and then just like threw McAvoy around. And I like McAvoy, but he's like, just sit down, son. All right, those are the awards. Happy birthday to the great Jaromir Jagr. It's been well documented his goal against Chicago in 92, but you know, he literally beat the Devils and saved the team from going bankrupt in 1999 on one groin. And or whatever, a bad groin, a pulled groin, whatever it was. He could barely walk. Scored in overtime, scored to tie the game, win the game in overtime, win game seven. The great Jaromir. But here's the best story. He's in Dallas, one of his 10 teams he played for. And he's got an assist. He goes back to the bench. They put on the big screen. They said, happy 1,000th Jaromir Jagr. And his teammate, I have it written down here, it's the guy's name, Eric Nystrom goes, Yogs, you got 1,000 points. He goes, no, that's assists. I had 1,000 points 10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. And see, he put up a picture of his 40th birthday, and he's hanging out with, like, I don't know, one of, like, the top models in Yugoslavia, like, some, like, they go just hanging out. He is continually like one of the coolest guys on earth. And he scored a goal last week that it looked like he was 22 again. Every once in a while, he gets that shot off.
Well, one of the most exciting players ever to play in terms of
play
pure excitement.
he's a top 10 forward ever, period. And, you know, I mean, if Ovechkin doesn't catch him, there'll be, asterisk here, he missed two work stoppages. Jagr would have been right there if you take away three KHLs and two work stoppages. But, you know, he went for the money, and that's his prerogative. But Jaromir Jagr, one of the absolute best.
That's ever. One more stat I wanted to get in real quick. Tonight, if McDavid scores tonight, it's 1 point tonight. Him and Sid will have reached 500 points in exactly 369 games.
Wow.
They're both, if McDavid gets just 1 point tonight, which is rare, usually gets two or three. But if McDavid gets 1 point tonight, him and Sid will have 500 points in exactly the same game. I mean, how comparable is that?
That's cool. That's interesting.
I'll tell you, too, I've been watching a little more Oilers than usual. He's playing his ass off this year.
He's the best player.
Yeah.
He's the best player.
He really stepped over McKinnon this year because he's playing McKinnon's game. He's going going between the circles. He's getting his nose dirty. I'll tell you, I don't know how much longer he's going to put up with that either. They got to make a move. They got to do something.
He was naturally strong, and he looks like he got stronger in the offseason. He looks bigger. He's the best ever.
Yeah. I am a big McKinnon fan, but I agree. He has now gone past him. He is really the best right now.
And how about Austin Matthews? 15 games, 13 goals. The great American hero.
Great year.
The Hart Trophy has his name on it already in Toronto. If you're looking at Twitter, that's for sure.
Great year for him.
fun show, everybody. I'm glad Lou came on and tried to explain some. I mean, I was the smartest this show ever sounded in 8 years. People thought they hit the wrong button.
There's an actual doctor on the show. Well, we want to thank Lou Lofredo. He was a great guest. Joe Bartnick, great job. Andy Picaro, great job. We want to welcome back our fantastic producer, Emma. And we want to thank all the Puck Off fans, the troops, and everyone out there. Please check us out next week. We are Puck Off. We are out.